They fled from tyranny. Your oppressions planted them in America. And yet, actuated by principles of true English liberty, they met all hardships with pleasure compared with those they suffered in their own country from the hands of those that should have been their friends. Men whose behavior on many occasions has caused the blood of those sons of liberty to recoil within them.
I know not what course others meet, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Believe me, remember, I this day told you so. That same spirit of freedom which actuated that people at first will accompany them still. But a people jealous of their liberties,
liberty,
and who will vindicate them if ever they should be violated. Sons of liberty.
Sons of liberty.
Sons of liberty. Liberty.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God.
Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past.
The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat Al-Qaeda.
All you got to do is start looking around, start thinking for yourself, start investigating things, and you will see it all right there. So you have the power. Humanity has the power. We have the power. Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
As for me, give me liberty or give me death!
The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Wednesday, March the 13th, 2013, and here are our top stories.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, a new poll shows that only 30% of Americans trust their own government. Then, Planned Parenthood is suing to perform webcam abortions. And a special report from Alex Jones and the nightly news premiere of Battle for the Republic. All that and more coming up on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, Sarah Palin is under attack for talking about DHS bullet purchases. An article from Paul Joseph Watson entitled Democratic Group Labels Talk of DHS Bullet Buys Extremist. He writes, a prominent Democratic Party lobby group is targeting users of AOL's email service with ads demanding they sign a petition calling on Sarah Palin to retract dangerous rhetoric about the federal government stockpiling ammunition in preparation for civil unrest. Well, what is that dangerous rhetoric that Sarah Palin put on her Facebook post? She said, if we're going to wet our proverbial pants over 0.3% in annual spending cuts when we're running up trillion-dollar annual deficits, then we're done. Put a fork in us. We're finished. We're going to default eventually. That's why the feds are stockpiling bullets in case of civil unrest. Well, Sarah Palin was absolutely right in this particular instance. This is a story that was broken by Paul Joseph Watson. He did the research and he reported it based on government documents, government bids, the government RFPs. And if anyone is paranoid or dangerous, it's the government. This is absolutely unprecedented what they're doing here. But basically what they've done is their people in the mainstream media have attacked this with a series of escalating lies. First, when we broke the story and Drudge reported it, they lied about the existence of these bids. But, you know, facts are stubborn things, and we can link to those things on the Internet. So the next thing that they did was they lied about the size of these purchases. When the government went out and bought an unprecedented amount of ammunition, 200 million bullets, they pointed to another purchase of only about 170,000. So they talked about something that was one-thousandth of the size of what we were talking about. And that's, you know, Sarah Palin was talking about 0.3% in cuts. Well, that's 0.1% of the purchases that the government was making. And when that didn't work, they went out and they bought, they doubled down on that. They went from 200 million purchases to 450 million was the next one. Then 750 million, then another 200 million, and on, to where they're up to about 2 billion right now. But, you know, so it kind of didn't work for them to talk about a few hundred thousand. So then the next thing that they talked about was the fact this is going to be used for target practice. Now, David Ortiz and I talked about this in great detail, and it's on Prison Planet TV, but basically, these are hollow point bullets, and you don't use hollow point bullets for target practice. You use them as anti-personnel. They're banned by Geneva Convention. The other thing is that if they were going to buy these things for target practice at the rate that they're using it, you're talking about 100 years worth of target practice. They said, of course, we're buying them in large quantities to save money. Well, you don't buy 100 years worth of stuff at Costco in order to save a little bit of money. So all these series of lies just don't hold up. So now what they're doing is they're attacking Sarah Palin and anybody who notices this. And actually, it's being noticed by quite a few people. Even Forbes is talking about it now. So a lot of the mainstream media is even asking questions and saying, we need to have a dialogue. Why is the government taking this unprecedented action? Well, just reporting on what the government is doing is enough to get you labeled as an extremist. And the Southern Poverty Law Center wants to now label you not only an extremist, but a terrorist. If you are somebody who is concerned about this or concerned about the Second Amendment, in an article by Kurt Nimmo, he says the LA Times announces that white men are terrorists. There's an increasingly frightening numbers of cells of angry men, says the Southern Poverty Law Center. Well, actually, this is the LA Times mimicking what the Southern Poverty Law Center has said. It says that they're preparing for combat with the U.S. government. They're usually heavily armed, blinded by an intractable hatred, often motivated by religious zeal. Now, this is a script that was basically created by the Southern Poverty Law Center. It's been parroted by the LA Times op-ed piece. MSNBC is hopping in there and doing their part, as well as the New York Times. The New York Times said they're not jihadists. They are white, right-wing Americans, nearly all of them with an obsessive attachment to guns, who may represent a greater danger to the lives of American civilians than international terrorists. See, that's what they're doing now. After telling everybody that they are creating this massive militarized police state against these people who are outsiders, you know, the Ausländers, as the Nazis would call them, now they're starting to turn inward. We're starting to see the military-industrial complex become the police-industrial complex. And, of course, the enemy is going to be anybody who is armed. And the other tactic that they're going to use is trying to divide people by along racial lines, by ethnic groups, and that sort of thing. And Aaron Dykes has a report on that following the news tonight. He's got a special bulletin report talking about that. And this is important because under the NDAA, labeling somebody an extremist or a terrorist, which is pretty vaguely defined, can be a death sentence, or it can be a sentence to being renditioned out of the country and tortured. And we have an interview tonight with Carl Mayer, who is leading the legal fight against the NDAA. So stay tuned for that. That's very important. Well, as Jesse Ventura pointed out, first they assassinate your character, then they assassinate you. All this talk about white people being terrorists and also the Tea Party, calling the Tea Party tea baggers. And so Rand Paul had a little bit of something to say about that. He said the Tea Party is like the American Revolution, and the Occupy movement is more like the French Revolution. He said the Tea Party, I always say, is more like the American Revolution. Occupy Wall Street is more like the French Revolution. We, that is the Tea Party, harkens back to a sort of rules, he said. We weren't unhappy with people just because they were rich. We weren't happy with you if you were making money off of our taxes, and we were bailing you out. If you were making $100 million, your bank goes bankrupt, and all of a sudden we bail you out, and you're still making $100 million, well, that upsets us. Well, it seems to me that both groups, both the Tea Party and the Occupy movement, realized how they're getting ripped off by the government and its crony capitalism with large corporations and large banks. And the whole idea summed up in the idea that someone would be too big to fail. The privatizing of profits, the socializing of losses, both groups understood that there was something that really stunk there. But the difference is that the Tea Party understands that free markets are different from a kind of crony capitalism. And the Occupy movement doesn't seem to make that distinction. But hopefully we can all agree to come together on liberty and not divide into some kind of a false left-right paradigm. Because as we see on the gun issue, the Democrats and Republicans tend to come together on issues that they think are important, and one of those is gun control.
right after Newtown, there was a view that maybe the right place that we could all come together on was background checks. Because background checks, unlike some of the other proposals here, which I support, do not interfere with the law-abiding citizens' right to bear arms.
Okay. Now, background checks had absolutely nothing to do with Sandy Hook, even if you buy the official story. Understand that background checks are code name for gun registration. That's what it's always been about. Now, in this article from Kurt Nemo, listen to what he says in the very first paragraph. He says, Dianne Feinstein's assault weapon ban now appears to be little more than decoy, sent out to be shot down while the real work on gun legislation is hammered out by Democrats, Republicans, and the NRA behind closed doors. Feinstein is doing the same thing with all of her talk about confiscation that she did back with the NDAA. If you remember, there was a Feinstein-Lee amendment, and the purpose of that amendment was to try to assuage some civil libertarians that they were really going to support the rule of law, that people were going to have their day in court, that we weren't going to a completely martial law scenario here. But that amendment really didn't say anything. What that amendment did was actually, if you read the text of it, it, as many people pointed out, as Stuart Rhodes with Oath Keepers pointed out, that actually assumes some powers for Congress that they don't have. But apart from that, what it did was it was a head fake. It gave cover to what was going on, and they got unanimous approval from the Senate. And then when the Senate and the House met in joint committee, McCain and Levin just threw it out. It just disappeared. So it was simply a head fake to deceive people. That's what I believe Feinstein is doing with all this talk of confiscation. Before they can do effective confiscation, they have to have more comprehensive registration. And I think if you look at the narrative of the whole gun control thing, it goes back, if you look to Fast and Furious, as well as the UN Arms Trade Treaty, that they've been working on these things for quite some time. Both of those are trying to get people concerned about the transfer of arms across international borders. And, of course, the only way that you can stop the transfer of arms, they believe, that they're selling to us, is to go in and register everything so that you know where it came from, that you can follow everybody. That's the way it's going to be sold, and that's what they're working on. Now, background checks, in terms of safety, background checks have never and never will save anybody. They had nothing to do with Sandy Hook. They were, and they're not going to keep any dangerous criminals or insane people from getting guns. The only thing that you can do to protect against that is to make sure that the population is armed as widely as possible, that sane people, that law-abiding citizens have the arms to protect themselves. Nobody did a background check on Davy Crockett. Nobody did one on Colonel Travis. Nobody did one on George Washington either. And it's not in the Constitution. So we need to fight background checks and realize that registration is code, that background checks are code name for registration, and it's going to all lead to gun confiscation. And there's a link to the full article on Infowars.com. Now, speaking of gun control, Aaron Dykes has a special bulletin about America's second-best gun salesman after Obama, Mayor Bloomberg.
Aaron Dykes here for Infowars.com and a quick news bulletin. Now, it came out today in Politiker how, after Aurora, Mayor Bloomberg made his plans for the next massacre and how he was going to use it to push gun control. Well, no duh. We saw this coming, but it's good to have it documented now. And it details how, in just a few hours after the Aurora massacre, he began flagging Obama, who was then a candidate for re-election, Romney, saying, what are you going to do about guns? Reviving his whole Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which itself is a fraudulent group, misdirecting on the real issue of gun violence, which really comes from gun control policies within cities, and making it seem like an individual problem, a big misdirection government always does despite the issue. But I already documented back on January 1st, New Year's of this year, the top 10 events that proved the Obama administration was already planning gun control long before the Newtown tragedy and just simply exploited it with all the dead children and used it to move forward the agenda they've been stealthily planning for years and years and years. Feinstein herself was admittedly working on her assault weapons ban legislation on the days leading up to the election, and it had nothing to do specifically with Adam Lanza or how he got his weapons or what allegedly happened there. It had to do with them waiting for any kind of tragedy to happen and just using the propaganda on the backs of it, making people feel guilty for those deaths and trying to take away everyone's rights. Signing off for InfoWars.com, I'm Aaron Dykes, and I want to remind you that at InfoWars.com/newsletter, you can sign up for free for our electronic newsletter and also get a free subscription to the electronic version of the very popular InfoWars magazines.
Now, when we see Republicans and Democrats working together to betray their base, Republicans on gun control, Obama on civil liberties, you got to wonder why Americans are suspicious about their government. Well, we've got 30% of Americans are the only ones who trust government. 70% don't. And you have to ask yourself, what's wrong with those other 30%? As it says in Washington's blog article, people see that we have socialism for the rich, but we have cutthroat, sink-or-swim capitalism for everyone else. They see that we have a malignant synergism between D.C. politicians and giant companies. And at the same time, the government spies on virtually all Americans and has threatened to assassinate or indefinitely detain American citizens on U.S. soil. Again, going back to the NDAA, don't forget we have that interview coming up. But also, some of us are seeing some other things, too, like massive ammunition purchases or tanks and drones being bought. We see the militarization of the police. And we even see DARPA working on these massive research projects, one after the other, to create some kind of a robot army. And so we all kind of have a kind of a sinking feeling about where that's all leading. And the question is, what's the matter with those 30% of people that they trust the government? And it's not just the federal government, it's at local level as well. We have a New Jersey woman who was arrested for reciting the Constitution at a tax meeting. Now, the interesting thing is that they have a private company that is doing the tax appraisals for this particular county. And residents have complained that the assessment program violates the Fourth Amendment because in order to make reevaluation assessments and determine the tax value of a property, company inspectors must enter the home and inspect them. If not allowed to do so, that company often assesses higher values on homes, leading to increased taxes. So basically, this woman went down and complained about the fact that she would have to have her house searched without a warrant. And as part of the complaint, she read from the Constitution, presumably the Fourth Amendment. And they got very upset with her, arrested her, and demanded, as a condition of getting a reasonable bond, that she hand over her handguns. And she questioned as to how they knew that she had these handguns. She had legally purchased them, but it was never mentioned at the meeting that she had guns. So that's also another troubling aspect of that. Now, Melissa Melton has done a special report on a new unusual practice, something called webcam abortions. And Planned Parenthood, in her article, she says, Planned Parenthood is suing to perform webcam abortions. After Wisconsin amended a law last year to ban the practice of webcam abortions, Planned Parenthood sued the state in federal court and lost. Now the organization has refiled that suit in another bid to overturn the law. Now, she's done a special report. Let's let Melissa Melton tell you exactly what this new thing called a webcam abortion is.
I'm Melissa Melton reporting for InfoWars Nightly News. Planned Parenthood is currently fighting the state of Wisconsin in court to reinstate its ability to perform webcam abortions.
In more than 60 Iowa counties, you won't find one obstetrician or gynecologist, and certainly no one performing abortions. That's a problem for Planned Parenthood, and a major reason it's investing in telemed abortions.
During this procedure, which Planned Parenthood refers to as a telehealth procedure instead of what it really is, a woman consults with a doctor over the internet in place of an in-person physical exam.
Once the conditions are met, the doctor simply presses a button and a drawer pops open in the room, allowing the woman access to abortion pills such as RU486.
What's wrong?
Nothing really.
Take 4 red capsules. In 10 minutes, take 2 more. Help is on the way.
A drug pushed through the FDA approval process under the Clinton administration using foreign data and with the help of the Rockefeller Foundation's Population Council.
RU486, otherwise known as Mifeprex, kills the fetus, while a second prostaglandin expels the dead child. Wisconsin has already passed a law joining Arizona, Nebraska, Kansas, and South Dakota in banning the practice. 5 other states, including Missouri, Mississippi, Iowa, Alabama, and Indiana, are also in the process of passing bills that would require a doctor to physically be present in the room to examine patients before prescribing abortion-inducing drugs. Not only does this process further dehumanize an already dehumanizing procedure, but it would leave the women without any access to the abortionist should she have complications. Abortions via pill are touted as a natural alternative to surgical abortion, like inducing a miscarriage. But in fact, RU486 complications were detailed by the FDA in a 2011 report showing that over 2,200 adverse reactions had been reported, including over 600 hospitalizations, 339 women requiring blood transfusions, 256 infections with 48 severe infections, and 14 women have even died in the U.S. since 2000. In fact, on the FDA medication guide, between 5 and 8% of women who take RU486 will still require a surgical procedure to end the pregnancy or stop too much bleeding. Just listen to one young woman detail her incredibly painful account of trying to end her pregnancy using RU486 at 6 weeks. Hours later, I writhed in my twin bed, suffering from debilitating convulsing cramps. The pain made me scream in torturous wails. I writhed, twisted, and contorted my body, praying that either I would die or the pain would stop. I called the emergency number they gave me and told them the painkillers were not working. They said very callously that there was nothing more they could do for me, informing me that this is normal and to just wait it out. Weeks later, the girl ended up in the ER where she was given 2 pints of blood, a DNC, and told if she had not arrived, she would have died. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, was pro-eugenics and wrote extensively on the fact that she felt the genetic makeup of the poor and minorities was inferior. One of her greatest influences, eugenicist Dr. Havelock Ellis, with whom she reportedly had an affair that ended her marriage, urged mandatory sterilization of the poor as a prerequisite to receiving any public aid.
Even if you're for abortion, you need to understand that it was created by eugenicists who wanted to kill black people. That is modern abortion, Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger. They said, how do we kill these black weeds? You can read her quotes, it's on record, look it up. And they said, we hire liberal blacks, we get them to be our front people, we sell it as women's rights, that's how we'll reduce the population. Hitler was for abortion. I just want you to know where the modern movement comes from.
Even today, Planned Parenthoods are typically located in disproportionately high minority and poor neighborhoods. So it should be no surprise these webcam abortions are being touted as something that helps low-income women. The practice of webcam abortions has allowed Planned Parenthood to expand its abortion services and generate more revenue. While telehealth can help people in rural locales receive legitimate medical care, especially in emergency situations, abortion is an elective procedure, and these webcam abortions can put women in serious danger. Beyond that, it's sad I even have to stand here and say the phrase webcam abortions. This just further dehumanizes the act of killing. Just like our unconstitutional illegal drone wars in other countries where we end up striking down thousands of innocent women and children, these women don't even have to see a doctor in real life. All they have to do to kill their babies is talk to a screen. For InfoWars Nightly News, I'm Melissa Melton.
Wow, that's quite a report. Even if you support abortion, I think you should be concerned about this dangerous practice of webcam abortions. That leads us to our quote of the day. 5 enemies of peace inhabit with us: avarice, ambition, envy, anger, and pride. If these were to be banished, we should infallibly enjoy perpetual peace. That's from Petrarch. Well, coming up right after the break, we've got that interview I've been talking about with Carl Mayer, who is leading the fight against the NDAA. Stay tuned.
I'm Darren McBreen, and these are some of the new items that are available now at InfoWarsShop.com.
Alert the public to Obama's blatant abuse of power with the new Obama t-shirt. Obama's Joker face on the front and come and take it on the back. It's time to publicly call him out for what he is, a tyrant. Defend the Second Amendment with our top seller come and take it t-shirts. And look at that, women's cut tank tops and t-shirts now available. Nice hat. Plus, the Don't Tread on Me flag. And now you can become a micro distributor of the InfoWars magazine. Plus, get your own copy delivered right to your door each and every month. And if you're tired like I am of you and your family being exposed to polluted drinking water, get the Pro One High Performance Water Filter. It gets rid of all pathogenic bacteria, cysts, fluoride, heavy metals, and numerous other contaminants.
So join the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
InfoWars Magazine is more than just our answer to the internet kill switch. We're also going back to the roots of this country. When our founders, for a decade before 1776, known as the pamphleteers, with hundreds of little printing presses in every colony, got out the real news, the real information, and countered the system. This is tailored, designed with the truth to wake up your friends and family. This is the 21st century version of the pamphleteers. So get them at InfoWarsShop.com or InfoWarsStore.com. Sign up and buy them in bulk. Sign up and be a micro distributor for a full year to buy them in bulk and get one of the newsstands added, or sign up and get 12 issues delivered to your door or give a gift subscription. Whatever you do, be part of the fight. And I want to salute and thank all of you that are subscribers and are getting the magazine in bulk or who have ever come to InfoWarsStore.com and bought any of our products, because we are supported by patriots and liberty lovers like you. We couldn't do it without you.
Well, our next guest is someone who is actually doing something about tyranny. You know, it's been said that the way for tyrants to win is for good men to do nothing. Well, this is a man who is doing this pro bono. He is fighting the NDAA. We have the lead counsel, or actually the co-lead counsel for that, Carl Mayer. Carl, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you, and it's an honor to be talking to somebody who's taking a stand against this. This is really important. Give us a quick update on the NDAA, and when I mean the NDAA, of course, we're talking about the National Defense Authorization Act, which is a big omnibus bill, but it's kind of become synonymous in the last little over a year with a very small section that was put in that could essentially overturn due process in this country.
Yeah, that's right. They call it the NDAA or the National Defense Authorization Act. I mean, you could also call it the bill that allows the military to police our streets in America and to put people into military prisons without the right to trial or a counsel.
Yeah, and it's a bipartisan effort too. Unfortunately, it's almost unanimous.
That's right. It's a completely bipartisan effort. Just the way this effort on the drones is a bipartisan effort with very few dissenters, you know, Rand Paul being the exception. There are, you know, some dissenters on both wings of the political spectrum, but I don't regard this as a left or right issue. I regard this as a fundamentally American issue, an issue of fundamental liberty versus the deprivation of liberty. And that's why we pledge to fight as hard as we can to stop this.
And let me expand on that before we get into the chronology a little bit of this. You know, it just broke this week after we had arranged this interview with you. LA Times editorial came out on March the 8th with an editorial said peril from, quote, patriots, unquote. And starts talking about people on the right, people who talk about the Second Amendment, that sort of thing, using a lot of the language and referring to the Southern Poverty Law Center and the way they've characterized things. And, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center has characterized Alex Jones and those of us here at InfoWars as being right-wing extremists. I noticed that, but then on the left, some of your co-plaintiffs, I mean, the lead plaintiff on this is Christopher Hedges. But you've also got down there, for instance, Alexa O'Brien, who on your page says, organize the USDayofRage.org, very similar, it sounds like, to the Day of Resistance that we just saw from some people who might be characterized by the media as being on the right. And it says that the DHS memos sent to law enforcement across the country stated that organizers of the U.S. Day of Rage were likely high-level cyber terrorists. So that's one of the issues about this is to, you know, terrorists can be basically anybody the government labels as a terrorist, right?
Right. That's the problem, and that's really gets to the fundament of why we brought this litigation, is because the government increasingly is characterizing dissenters of any political stripe, be they left, right, or center, as terrorists if they don't like what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that is a dangerous development in this country. We're now we're now over 4,100 days of this war. It's the longest war in American history by far. And the government has taken this as an opportunity to completely remake our civil liberties such that they're undermined, to completely create an enormous federal bureaucracy that is supposed to be hunting down terrorists. It's also a boondoggle to private contractors. Everyone, I think, who's listening should read the terrific piece by Dana Priest in the Washington Post in the summer of 2010, which was called Top Secret Government. And in that expose in the Washington Post, they stated in enormous detail about how there are now 1,200 government agencies devoted to this so-called war on terrorism that has no end. There are over 1,900 private contractors devoted to this war on terrorism. There are almost 1 million square feet of office space, larger than the Pentagon by far, devoted to this, to eavesdropping on Americans, spying on Americans, drones, et cetera, et cetera. And it really has totally reshaped our democracy. And this is what this lawsuit about is one component of it. I think this breach of our liberties is every bit as concerning as the drone strikes, because what this law does that's supported by both parties is it allows for the first time the military to make decisions about who is detained and who is put in, whose liberty is taken from them within the confines of the United States of America. The only precedent really in American history that goes against that is the Korematsu case, which was during World War II when the military rounded up Japanese American citizens and put them in internment camps in this country. And that has been uniformly seen as a tragic chapter in American history and one that defiled all of our liberties. Mm-hmm. That's why we're bringing this case. This law, to get to your point about the chronology, this law was signed under dark of night on January 31st, 2011, by President Obama, while the country was celebrating the upcoming New Year. President Obama signed a law that he had promised to veto and that he had campaigned against.
That should raise red flags with everybody right there, right?
That's right. And it was both parties were behind it. And what this law allows the military to do, and if we have a couple minutes, I can go through this, because your listeners, your viewers are not going to believe this. So what the law does is allows the military to detain in a military prison anyone who, quote, substantially supports Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces, or anyone engaging in hostilities against the United States. Now, those are totally undefined terms. They're not defined in the statute. 25 years of practicing law, I've never seen a statute that has no definitional section. And it says that these people can be detained until, quote, the end of hostilities, which could be forever. So that means no right to trial by jury, no right to counsel. But it gets worse. It gets much worse, because the ability for the military to detain people in our country in a military prison is only one of four things that they can do to anyone that they suspect of, quote, substantially supporting terrorism. And by the way, at the trial that we had last year, the government didn't deny that some of our plaintiffs, who are nothing but journalists and activists, could be brought within the ambit of the statute. But the other things that the government could do to people under this law are, number one, they could give them a military trial, which would be before a judge rather than a jury. They could put them before any, quote, appropriate tribunal. And who knows what that means, but it sounds like a kangaroo court. But the worst thing that this law allows to do is it allows the military to extradite anyone. It's not even extradite, to send anyone without any hearings, without any judicial intervention, to pick someone up in the United States of America and send them to any foreign country or any foreign entity.
Right. So that means rendition. Yeah. And they do rendition, right, because the implied purpose of that is so they can be tortured in another country and not have to worry about violating, quote unquote, U.S. laws.
Right, exactly. They could send them to, you know, some of the worst human rights violators on the planet, Syria, mm-hmm, North Korea, whomever. They could send them to any foreign country or entity, they could send them to the custody of the equivalent of the Syrian CIA or the, you know, Syrian secret police or the North Korean secret police, wherever. They could send them, you know, to places in this world that have absolutely no rights.
And actually, we have seen that in some of the news that broke. It was like some odd 50 some odd countries, mm-hmm, that had been used for rendition, and in that list were countries that we just overthrew, Libya, Egypt, and Syria that we're trying to overthrow. And those were our partners with the CIA torturing people under rendition.
Right. But what this law, the NDAA, does, it makes it even easier. At least in some of these other cases, there's either some type of hearing or review, or they're first taken into a military prison. But the NDAA gives the military the green light to snatch anyone at any time within the United States and send them to these foreign countries or entities. So we think this is an appalling breach of our civil liberties.
Well, you wasted no time in attacking this. You had a lawsuit, about the middle of January after he had signed it on New Year's Eve?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes. We first filed in January. Christopher Hedges, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning war correspondent for the New York Times for 20 years, he stepped up to be the first plaintiff. Mm-hmm. And then we were joined, and the complaint was amended later in 2011 to include, 2012, later in 2012 to include Daniel Ellsberg, who is the whistleblower behind the Pentagon Papers, and yes, a group of activists.
Mm-hmm. And now you want an injunction you got a temporary restraining order in May, and then that judge gave an injunction in September to actually stop the enforcement of this. That's correct?
Yeah, we had a trial in federal district court in New York before Judge Catherine Forrest, who wrote, I thought, an extraordinary 68-page opinion in May, granting a preliminary injunction which stopped this statute cold in its tracks. The judge then decided to hold a hearing, an additional hearing after the first trial, on a permanent injunction to decide whether she would permanently enjoin this. And that injunction was issued on September 12th. So it was really, I thought, a hard-fought victory. Judge Forrest deserves a lot of credit. You can read her opinions on stopndaa.org for your listeners.
Right. It's amazing. It's about a 200-page opinion, and it's really strong. She agreed with you about the specificity issues and the terms that were there, and she says the Constitution requires specificity. Like you said, you've never seen a statute before that had no definition of terms at the bottom. It's pretty amazing. But we're getting close on time, and I want to talk a little bit about this most recent trial that you had. So basically, she put an injunction on, and then a federal court put a stay on her injunction. Is that the correct legal term? So essentially they kind of stopped what she was trying to stop and let it go, so the government can now essentially enforce this NDAA until the appeal.
Right. Well, yes, they put in a stay pending appeal. This is a little bit technical, but it just meant that there was a stay pending appeal until the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which also sits in New York and is the highest appellate court before the Supreme Court, until they can rule on the merits of this, the government can continue under this program. Although I would like to think that the government would be very, very hard pressed to pick up people like our plaintiffs and stick it in the eye of the courts while this is going on. But you never know what the government will do.
Now,
and they've changed. Yeah. So
now,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Now, to make this clear, your case, you're picking up journalists and activists because there's an issue of who has standing to make a clear case. We can't just pick a random citizen out. But of course, as a journalist, I'm not satisfied to see due process upheld for only journalists, and I'm sure you aren't either. But you've got, we want to see it for all persons. That's what the Constitution addresses, is all persons. That doesn't even narrow it down to citizens, as the Feinstein-Lee Amendment tried to carve out protection for citizens and legal residents, for due process. The Constitution talks about persons. So I'm sure we want to see that. But now, specifically talking about the journalists, one of the things that I wanted, in the brief amount of time we've got left here, the Justice Department attorney, Robert Loeb, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes.
Said that no journalists had been detained by the U.S. since September 11th. But then, of course, I think you talked about the case of Sam al-Haji, an Al Jazeera cameraman who was sent to Gitmo.
Yes, that's right. Sami al-Haj. And the government slandered him at the hearing because they claimed that he had supplied Stinger missiles to al-Qaeda. But if that were the case, they would have charged him. They never charged him. Mm-hmm. He was released without being charged. So you can't do that.
Right.
And to be clear, even though our plaintiffs are journalists, the Judge Forrest injunction applied to everybody. And she ruled that the statute was unconstitutional, and that means everyone would be protected if we win.
Good. Yeah. Good. Excellent. Yeah, it's truly amazing the double talk that we see. You know, Obama saying he's not interested in signing this, but then doing it the dead of night, saying he's not interested in using it, but then he fights tooth and nail to stop this, to put a stay on the injunction that stops it. So it's very concerning to all of us to see this and to see what is essentially the overturn of centuries of legal protections and due process.
Yeah, it really is an egregious undermining of Americans' liberties. It's what we fought the revolution for. The British were fairly consistent in violating what we call our liberties at the time. They would knock down people's walls and use the military to detain people. And that is why we passed these constitutional protections, particularly the Fourth Amendment and the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And that's why we still fight to preserve them. Unfortunately, by and large, the courts have taken a hands-off position with some exceptions. Judge Forrest, I thought, was very courageous, although her opinion is grounded in substantial precedent. So we're going to fight this as long as we can.
It was very impressive. She's a relatively new judge. The brief is amazing in its strength, and it's also amazing she was an Obama appointee. Three cheers for Judge Forrest. But tell us now where this goes. Is it still going to, and when is there going to be the next hearing? How far away is it from a Supreme Court decision?
Right. Well, the Second Circuit, a panel of three judges, has this under consideration. We had oral arguments about a month ago on February 6th in Manhattan before the three-judge panel. They will issue their opinion. It could come down any day. At that point, certainly if we win, we will again call on the Obama administration and the Republican Party to end this assault on our liberties. They have not shown any inclination to do that. So if we win, we would expect them to appeal it to the Supreme Court. If we lose, we will immediately file a petition for certiorari, which is a petition asking the Supreme Court to hear this.
Okay.
We will ask them to do so on an expedited basis, like we have asked the judiciary since day one of this litigation, is to get to this issue as quickly as possible rather than let it linger.
So you're waiting for this decision. As soon as the decision comes down, I'm sure that whichever side loses is going to appeal to the Supreme Court, and you expect that to be expedited.
Well, we will ask for it. Whether they will or not, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, well, it's kind of been expedited pretty quickly through the process so far, hasn't it?
As far as the law moves very slowly, but this has been very fast for the law.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us, Carl, and we certainly appreciate what you're doing. It is very, very important work. It's something that affects all of us, and the rights that we have had our ancestors fight for and win over centuries have been taken away essentially with the stroke of a pen. We hope that can be reversed, and we really appreciate you taking the lead in this fight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, that's very important work that Carl is doing. If you want to get in touch with him, if you want to help with the lawsuit, remember he's doing that pro bono. You can get in touch with him at carlmayer.com, and that's spelled M-A-Y-E-R, C-A-R-L-M-A-Y-E-R. Also, there's stoptheNDAA.org for information, let you know what's going on with that. There's a wealth of information there at that website. And we'll also keep you updated at prisonplanet.tv. We're going to be following this. This is one of the key issues affecting our liberties, all of our rights. It essentially attacks half of the Bill of Rights directly, just this one piece of legislation. So this is something that is vital for us to be informed about. It's vital for us to oppose it. We have some efforts going on in state governments that you can get involved with. Texas has an anti-NDAA bill. Maybe you can get one started in your city or your state. And if you want to keep up with that, become a subscriber to Prison Planet TV. It helps to pay for our bandwidth. Speaking of bandwidth, you can have up to 10 people at a time can look at this the reports live. You can pass it out to a few more people, but we ask that you support this to help pay for the cost to run this. Well, that's the end of our news tonight. Stay tuned. After about a one-minute break, we're going to be back with a special report from Aaron Dykes, as well as Alex introducing a clip from his 2008 documentary, Battle for the Republic, and why it is even more relevant today.
Jakari Jackson here, and I want to talk to you for a second about water. You know about ProPure, our flagship water purification system, but check out some of our portable water filter products at InfoWarsStore.com. The clearly filtered water pitcher. Also, for those of you on the go, we have the Athlete Edition filtered water bottle and the RAD Eliminator Pro filtered sports bottle that removes radiation. And keep in mind, we have replacement filters for all of these products. The ever-popular grab-and-go bag favorite, the Life Straw. The Crystal Quest shower filter system. And the Aquapod Kit, great for mass storage of water. And while you're at the InfoWars shop, pick up a copy of our latest book, 31 Days to Survival. You can find all this and more at the InfoWarsStore.com. And don't forget, it's your support that funds our operation. Sign up for our free newsletter at InfoWars.com/newsletter.
Welcome back to our extended version of tonight's Nightly News. Thanks for sticking around. Now, race is being used as a wedge issue. A lot of people are coming together with concerns about government encroachment on our individual liberties, and the tactic is to now separate us into different ethnic groups, a divide and conquer. And Aaron Dykes has a special report on some of the bizarre efforts to do that.
Aaron Eric Dykes here for Infowars.com. Now, you've heard the alerts on our website how the SPLC and mainstream media who are following their lead are now labeling the next potential terrorist not as jihadists, not as Muslim people, but as white people. And they say in part, quote, they're not jihadists. They are white, right-wing Americans, nearly all with an obsessive attachment to guns, who may represent a greater danger to the lives of American civilians than international terrorists. And you say, why are they doing that at the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center? Why is the U.S. government touting that? Well, for the reasons they always do, to use divide and conquer tactics to distract people from the real issues of consolidation of power, of banking in our government, meddling with our finances and taking everything. They want people to be distracted by race and to buy into the bogus war on terror that's continually falling, even as support for government falls. Now, on the heels of that, there's a shocking report in CNSnews.com. Wisconsin Vista program encourages volunteers to overcome white privilege. Now, this is a branch of AmeriCorps, the service that Obama and other people in government want everyone to have to commit 2 years of national service to. And they have an indoctrination program for these volunteers who work with people who are poor so they can overcome and recognize their privileges, not just as being people in the middle class or upper class, but of being white itself. They've got a certain set of courses that the Department of Public Information wants their volunteers to indoctrinate themselves with, titled Power and Privilege. They have all kinds of websites, links, seminars you can attend, and they're all centered around race and feeling bad about, quote, your white privilege.
I remember sitting in a meeting and being told that I need to own my whiteness and I need to own the fact that I have white privilege. I almost feel the embarrassment from it and the shame from it. Only then can I start breaking, you know, down the walls and be able to teach my students of color and to reach out to them, which of course is absolutely absurd.
Specifically, they have a mental model for white anti-racists. So if you're not racist, you have to follow this, they say. And one of the reminders is to wear a white wristband to remind yourself of your white privilege so other people can see it and know you feel guilty about this. And while you do that, they say you want to find a person of color who can hold you accountable as you try to live up to your guilt in this matter and undo your privilege. This is all backwards. It's going to only contribute to racial divide. How did we go from recognizing that it was wrong to single out Jewish people by putting yellow stars on them to thinking that white bracelets could help people overcome racism somehow? While they set up white people to take the blame for all the racial problems in society and to set them up, of course, as the next domestic terrorist whenever the government stages a new attack to bolster their flagging support, they're encouraging groups like Hispanics to become revolutionary and revolt over border issues. These billboards put up in Austin that tell people in Spanish to rise up, my people, arriba mi gente, showing a revolutionary crowd raising flags, throwing their fist in the air, and ready to take over. And just imagine if some white supremacist group put up their own billboards. If there's a KKK mural up on the highways, people would throw fits, and they should. But again, the main problems are systematic. We are all being debased through these global trade policies, GATT, NAFTA, WTO, you name it, coordinated at the elite financial level, not happening at the individual levels. We need to learn to live together, and we can. But we don't need to divide ourselves further with this kind of propaganda. I want to remind people you can follow us at Infowars.com/newsletter. If you sign up, you get a free electronic copy of our very popular Infowars magazine. Signing off for Infowars.com, I'm Aaron Dykes.
That was pretty amazing what people do to try to create racism. Now, 6 years ago, in 2007, Alex Jones did a documentary, Endgame, and part of that documentary, we had a featurette in there called Battle of the Republic, and Alex is going to introduce that and talk about how the racism that he talks about in Battle for the Republic, how that's even more relevant today. Here's that report.
You've just seen Aaron Dykes' report dealing with whites being told by the state that to be part of these government programs and colleges, they're looking at making them wear white bands around their arms, like Jews being forced to wear yellow stars. Ladies and gentlemen, the so-called leftists in this country are not leftists. They're not even liberals. Thomas Jefferson was a liberal. They are wild authoritarians. Now, the Republican power structure is bought off by the globalists as well, and they're their own brand of corruption. But the virulent revolutionary fervor is coming from the controlled left, and it's being financed by the Fortune 100. And in a moment, we're going to premiere from the archives, and I say premiere because this short film never really got any attention. We're going to premiere here on the Nightly News in the 2 years we've been up and running. Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement's Extra Battle for the Republic. It's about 19 minutes long. There's a few copies online, but they're very low res. We're going to premiere this in the history of the Nightly News coming up here in just a few minutes. But I have some incredibly grave news for the viewers and listeners of the Nightly News and the radio show. You know we've written scores of articles about Homeland Security the last 4 years, shifting from saying Al-Qaeda is the terror threat and the reason for the domestic takeover to gun owners, conservatives, libertarians, returning veterans. And we noticed in training manuals and videos that started leaking 2 years ago, you can see these articles up at InfoWars.com, we'll put a few of them on screen, that everyone who's a terrorist is white. Everyone, I'm talking in more than 15 videos, is a minority. The minorities report the evil whites who are the terrorists. And the Southern Poverty Law Center, the ADL, and others, they've come out and basically said that inherently gun owning is racist. You've seen Fox reporters and sports reporters say the NRA is the new Ku Klux Klan. Asinine stuff that has no basis in reality, simply as a political mechanism to demonize people. Then last week, the Southern Poverty Law Center came out and put out a report, and then they listed two reports, listing myself as the chief, you know, enemy and potential terrorist, saying that right-wing and anti-New World Order groups, and they went on to say world government doesn't exist, I'm going to show you that in a moment, that we believe tyranny is taking place, and so that we are set to blow things up and be terrorists. Now, obviously, if you know Oklahoma City, you know other operations, those are staged provocateur events. Whoever blows stuff up looks terrible in the media. Who stands to gain from carrying out staged terror attacks? Who has a history of doing it? The foreign megabanks of the New World Order that are announcing world government and taking over right now and who have signed us on to their derivatives. And so they don't want Hispanics and blacks and Asians and others to feel like they have a stake in the Second Amendment and private property rights and sovereignty that made us so great and wealthy. They want to bind them using racial triggers to be anti-gun and anti-white. And that's what MSNBC pushes. You know, Al Sharpton on there says we've got to overcome the whites and the Southerners to get the guns. Rangel says that. This is incredibly racist. By their definitions, it's Ku Klux Klan level. But they're black or they're Hispanic, so it's okay. So this is the over-the-top type stuff we're seeing. Now, behind the scenes, they've been telling the police and military this for the last 4 years, and we've shown the manuals, the MIAC, the Homeland Security. The training videos the last 2 years for Homeland Security have shifted to this, where they say the terrorists are the white people. We've covered that here. Now it's in hundreds of newspapers today as a major push. You know that's a major push when the same talking point is all over the news the same day. So I want to direct everyone, and I'm going to show you a document cam shot of this, to the Los Angeles Times, Peril from Patriots. And the people have signs here saying only criminals and government want an unarmed public. And it goes on to say that demonstrators rally outside New York against new gun laws, which would actually have banned many guns, and they actually did. They're arresting people for over seven-round mags. Now, they go on in the article to say there is no gun control, no one's coming for your guns, and they say that it's outlandish one-world government conspiracy theories. And it says, what can be done to reverse the tide of belligerent ignorance? Not much. And they go on to say, all we can do is go after the terrorist. We've done nothing. It's clear they're getting ready to frame us. They won't say who even wrote this piece, probably the Southern Poverty Law Center. It doesn't even say who wrote it. And it quotes the Southern Poverty Law Center that is a Justice Department organ. They're a spokesman, so they can say things that government can't. They're a mouthpiece, a shill, a surrogate. on record. And it goes on. Now here's the key. I'm only reading part of this because of time. It says, listen to this. There are increasingly frightening numbers, cells, meaning terrorists, of angry men in the United States preparing to combat with the U.S. government. They are usually heavily armed, blinded by a intractable hatred. No, our eyes are wide open. Yours are wide shut. Often motivated by religious zeal. They are not jihadists. They are white, right-wing Americans, nearly all with an obsessive attachment to guns, who may represent a greater danger to our lives of American civilians than international terrorists. So see, this is the main lining of all of this. And they're basically saying prepare for war. Now, they're also coming out saying there aren't 2,700 armored vehicles that they just ordered, on top of 10,000 last year. There aren't 2 billion rounds. They actually say that's a lie. Even though it's in Forbes and AP, it's true. In hundreds of other papers, they're saying, see, this is military when they're just denying everything. That's a military tactic. We're going to premiere Battle for the Republic here on the news in just a moment. You have to understand, this is just a snapshot. Now, let me move to this next article. This is Kurt Nemo's breakdown of this. LA Times announces white men are the terrorist. Very important that you get this article from Infowars.com. And it also breaks down the fact that we predicted this many, 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 many times, as we showed you on screen from Infowars.com. Now, here's what Aaron Dykes covered earlier. This is all over the country they're doing this, where heterosexual college students are told something's wrong with them. See, it's not about unity and equality. It's about groups that government has as their clients declaring all of us the political food. Because in an authoritarian system, you've got to have somebody that's the bad guy to roll out the draconian attacks. In Germany, it was the Jews, Seventh-day Adventists, people like that. With the communists, it was anybody that had, you know, two pennies to rub together or a, you know, pot to piss in. China, it was anybody that had any money. Now they're saying whites are the terrorists. Now, of course, there's tens of millions of blacks, Hispanics, you name it, that love liberty, love guns. All the black sheriffs you've seen out there defending the same amendment. They don't want that. They don't want people going, hey, we're unified by a culture of liberty and freedom. They are scared to death of that, and they're using a communist model. They're not really communists, but they're using the communist playbook that they've used in countries and regions to play groups off against each other. The communists would come in and get a bunch of minorities that together were the majority to ally with the state and go after the group they wanted to persecute. The UN did that in Rwanda, having one group go after the minority Christians, the Tutsis with the Hutus. This is the divide and conquer game. The globalists hate everybody. They're eugenicists. And they're trying to cause a revolution and a civil war. And if they don't succeed, the globalists are all in Europe and offshore. The imploding economy, they'll still come in and buy it up for cheap. But if they succeed, they can use the army manuals and training for gun confiscation, re-education centers. Just if you're a new viewer, type in army manual civilian inmate labor camp. Boom. Army.mil. Army manual on gun confiscation. Army.mil. It'll be the first link. Military trains to take on militias. Military trains to take on Tea Party. Tea Party to merge with Al-Qaeda. They have all these made-for-TV shows about this, like Founding Fathers, where, oh, that patriot says they're pro-gun? You know, that guy named Jones or Johnson? They're really Al-Qaeda. So they're also pushing that. It's not racist to own guns. It has no basis in reality to say that. But they don't care. They push it. There's no Tea Party people with Al-Qaeda. It's our government running Al-Qaeda in Libya and Syria, and the president of Afghanistan has come out and said that recently. But they're saying we're with them. You see, because we're the people that know what's going on. And I'm talking to the new viewers out there who will read the spam bots on YouTube, you know, after this airs on the nightly news, who are just regurgitating. It's admitted they have government corporate bots that just spam, oh, this is entertainment, oh, this isn't real, oh, Alex is racist, or Alex isn't racist enough, or Alex is anti-white. And it's come out in the news, 70%+ of Obama's Twitters are fake. It's come out in the news, it's all fake, folks. And the Republicans won't save you either. That's the point, is they give you nowhere to run. And now as you say, well, I'll get storable food, I'll get guns, because the government's buying food and buying weapons and tanks. Any fool would know you better get ready and get prepared. So now in Wisconsin, the VISTA program encourages volunteers to overcome white privilege by wearing a white armband to show that it's basically bad and evil to be white. I mean, folks, this is pure authoritarianism and saying to whites under peer pressure, you will submit to a communist socialist agenda on the grassroots with fascism extracting it to offshore combines that are tax exempt, like GE and others. GE made $108 billion last year, paid no taxes. Look it up. But they lobby to have middle class taxes raised, telling the poor somebody making $125,000 a year is rich. They don't want a middle class. So they oversimplify the middle class as white, as terrorist, as the devil. I mean, you're seeing history happen here. And this is the most wild fake government game plan I've ever seen. But it's targeting a TV-watching, dumbed-down, out-of-reality culture. I had a guest on from the Veritas Project today who's lived in New Jersey his whole life, and he talked about it. Most New Jerseyans see a cop with a gun, they feel good. They see a gun in a citizen's hand, they freak out in fear. And so it is a civil war. I'm going to show a document cam shot of this, where some states get liberty and get basic freedom, like Texas and others. But others, like New York, have absolutely no connection to reality. Or there's a minority of people who are black, white, Hispanic, you name it, that get liberty. But it doesn't matter, because if you say you're pro-gun, you're shouted down as a racist. You're like, what does that have to do with race? It is pure psychological warfare. Why the tyrants want your guns. And the new March issue, Civil War II, inside the mind of the establishment. That's why the March issue is so important. It goes over their entire plan to create a new civil war and make it a race war. And that's what government's doing. Now, these exhibits I'm showing you are just from the last few days. Let me show you this in conclusion before we premiere. And again, I say premiere because this has been lost. It's been in the back of a film as an extra for 6.5 years, Endgame that came out in, 2006? And it's never aired on the nightly news or the radio show. And it's very important. Battle for the Republic. Look at this article. City billboard urges Hispanics to revolt. Imagine if cities put up billboards calling for Anglos to rise up. And it's on Highway 183 near North Lamar Boulevard in Austin, Texas. It shows Mexico, and we'll show you a blow-up of that right now. It shows Mexico in the heart. It's the Texas-Mexico border. And it's people with flags rising up, and it says, my people, you know, rise up, my people. And we've got great Spanish speakers, you know, here in this office who are Mexican-Americans. They want to just be called Americans. They want the Bill of Rights Constitution. And they said, well, in this context in Spanish, that means basically rise up, riot. Well, I mean, arriba means rise up, my people. So this is just incredible. And we've got the larger res photos up at Infowars.com. And it's paid for through a city-sponsored, paid-for taxpayer art group. And when you see from 6.5 years ago, from the extra of my film Endgame, Battle for the Republic, one of the extras, notice that I've got radio stations, TV station billboards saying La Invasora, The Invasion, La Reconquista, The Reconquering, showing white people with their heads cut off. This is how it's advertised. And white guys, in one case, who owns the big chain, that's what he runs to get the viewers. We're going to get the gringo. We're taking over. Ah, ha, ha. The New World Order is getting us all. And this is how they've set it up. Tribal politics is powerful. But while they got their gun control in, while they got their socialism in, while they got their indoctrination in, they spoke to the higher angels, you know, the better angels of whites. It was whites that ended slavery. It was going on all over the world. It was Christians that ended it. But they only talk about America and its history to demonize it, to create a guilt, not to create liberty, but to sell the entire tyranny agenda. This is what the globalists are doing. This is their plan. This is their program. And I'm begging you to understand that just like a prison where they segregate people in the white gangs, the Hispanic gangs, the black gangs, and the Asian gangs, it's on the West or East Coast, they have the big Asian gangs, and that's how they want it, and that's how they want society, because you're thinking about all the racial groups fighting with each other. What about the globalists that want to be the referees? What about the globalists? What about the prison guards, the prison? That's what America's becoming, a prison country, a prison planet. So I give you the short film that's got some incredibly graphic footage on it of police beating whites who dared protest against illegals calling for amnesty, and the illegals celebrating. And it's going to be the government with the illegals who are going to come for the guns and everything else, and they are going to shell it in a race-based system, and they'll end up enslaving everybody in the final equation. And it's going to cause a civil war, and that is the plan. And I've talked to a lot of other experts. I'm probably the leading expert on this. I've been predicting it for a decade. It's here. And this is the plan. So you've been warned. This is real. And the system's getting ready to stage terror attacks. They've got the TV shows about how white terrorists are going to blow up everything. And then now they're saying it's really going to happen. They've got it all primed for the TV heads to really think it's real and then say, see, gun owners did Sandy Hook. You're all guilty. Oh, see, whites blew up, you know, the new attack that's coming. And remember, I told you about 9/11 before it happened, a lot more. I'm the expert on government-sponsored terror. I want to encourage you to become an expert on it. Operation Ajax, Operation Gladio, Gulf of Tonkin, Operation Northwoods. Write these terms down. Don't believe me, folks, because this is all happening. And they're going to carry it out if they think they can get away with it. Okay, we'll go ahead now and play Battle for the Republic. Please, TV viewers, PrisonPlanet.tv viewers, get this out to everyone you know. If you are a subscriber to InfoWars Nightly News on PrisonPlanet.tv, it's 11 memberships for $5.95 a month. That's less than 55 cents per person. Go get a membership if you're watching this later on YouTube. Or share your membership with people. 11 people can log in simultaneously. Become a PrisonPlanet.tv member. Help get this information out if you believe in it. All right, let's go ahead and go to Battle for the Republic. Estelin then told us about the Bilderberg Group's concern that the American people are awakening to their attempt to use the third world populations as a battering ram to accelerate North American integration and the end of the United States.
One of the things that happened last year, there was a lot of talk about the Patriot Movement in America. They're very worried about the Patriot Movement in America in 2005. That's one of the subjects they were discussing. We saw last year how a very small but very determined population base could put an end, literally stop dead in their tracks, all the illegal immigrants coming through. They did not make the Bilderbergs very, very happy.
America is being sacrificed on the altar of globalism. The United States must fall before the New World Order can rise.
Used to be Mexico, you know what I mean? And the people that were here before, they're just not gonna get up and leave.
Mexico! 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 Arriba Mexico!
The globalists are using a divide and conquer strategy to balkanize the United States.
You know, they cause all this exploitation across the globe, and they wonder why people come to America. You know?
So is your argument that NAFTA and CAFTA are designed to increase legal immigration?
It's not designed. Well, you know what? You might have a point there.
While the controlled corporate media teaches Americans that pro-U.S. nationalism is backwards and xenophobic, the very same media is busy teaching Mexicans that ultra-extreme race-based nationalism is good and part of their culture. The federal government, tax-free foundations, and the Fortune 500 have pumped more than $800 billion into a long-term strategic plan to export Latin American revolution into the United States. The elite are rolling out the red carpet to the third world because the United States must be divided before it can be absorbed into the North American Union, itself to form the first piece of the Pan-American Union. The New World Order social engineering has done a masterful job at exploiting historical divisions between the U.S. and Mexico. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Spanish-speaking media drills it into their audiences' heads that the Southwest
from California to Texas, once belonged to Mexico, and that the United States stole it in 1848 with the signing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. Every child in Mexico is taught from birth and officially in school that the United States is the arch enemy of Mexico and that it is their job to travel to the United States to take part in a reconquering or La Reconquista of the United States. It is a historical fact that Mexico was born out of hardcore corruption and is still one of the most oppressive nations on earth. Mexico has the greatest concentration of wealth per capita in the world. But Mexico's tiny elite rules over one of the poorest and most oppressed populations on earth. The corrupt elite of Mexico tell their enslaved population that all of their problems are caused by the United States. Mexico also uses the United States as a steam valve against internal revolution by exporting their angry masses to the north. The Mexican people did not gain freedom with independence from Spain. From 1822 to 1836, Mexico was ruled by more than 10 dictators, calling themselves everything from the Emperor of Mexico to the King of the Americas. In 1 year alone, Mexico had 6 different masters. Completely bankrupt, Mexico could not maintain the few tiny forts and missions that guarded their northern realm. States were in continual rebellion across the collapsing empire. After Texans gained independence by defeating Santa Anna, things quieted down until April 24, 1846. When a Mexican cavalry force of 2,000 launched a sneak attack, wiping out a 63-man U.S. force patrolling the border. Mexican troops continued their assault deeper into U.S. territory for several months until they were turned back by U.S. forces, which then launched a lengthy campaign ending with the capture of Mexico City on September 15, 1847. The historical truth is incontrovertible. The West was won by the United States. England, Russia, Mexico, France, all laid claim to the West at one time or another, but none could hold it. Even the native tribes warred with each other for the land. In the 21st century, the architects of the New World Order are using cheap slave goods and oceans of third world migrants to overrun the United States. The irony is staggering when you realize that the same oligarchs that have wrecked the third world are now framing the United States for their crimes and using the rightfully enraged mob as a weapon of conquest. The guest worker amnesty plan being pushed is nothing more than a North American Union standardized ID card that erases all three nations' sovereignties. Spanish-speaking TV, radio, and print is literally on fire with talk of revolution, with many stations bearing the name La Invasora or The Invader. More than 600 billboards were purchased in Los Angeles alone, proclaiming that L.A. is now part of Mexico. If you really think about it, it's perfect for the elite. Americans who don't speak Spanish are unaware of what's going on, so the corporate-controlled revolution can build in semi-secrecy. Most of the media outlets spewing the slogan, Viva la Raza, which translated means Long Live the Race, are owned by New York and London-based companies that are cold-bloodedly pushing the breakup of the United States. We have discovered a national trend where government is demonstrating a clear double standard in their treatment of citizens versus illegal aliens. Citizens are arrested if they don't have insurance or driver's license. Illegals are not. Illegal aliens don't have to have a valid form of identification to set up a bank account or get a car loan, while citizens do. The government also subsidizes the illegals via welfare at taxpayer expense. This is not done to help the illegals, but to subsidize the large corporations that employ them
in an ongoing war against the middle class. But selective enforcement got even worse in Seattle, Washington. Tens of thousands of demonstrators took to the streets demanding amnesty for 30 million illegal aliens, despite the fact that many of them were undocumented. They were afforded the First Amendment right to speech and expression. Apparently taking over downtown Seattle, Washington, while waving Mexican flags and screaming La Raza was not enough for them. Of course, in Mexico, most demonstrations are broken up by the parasitic police force firing machine guns into crowds, killing people. But that didn't stop them from demanding the police physically stop an American citizen from engaging in his own silent protest. Josh Moore shot this video on a small still camera while riding his motorcycle and was stuck in traffic for more than an hour due to the protest. The police did not arrest a protester who assaulted the driver through his sunroof as the crowd cheered. Nor did they stop the protesters as they bashed out his window and kneed, punched, and kicked his car in plain view of the police. A plainclothes police officer then gave uniformed police the order to arrest the citizen, who had since complied with the officer's directive to suppress his First Amendment rights. The commanding officer claps and cheers along with the predominantly foreign mob as the citizen is arrested. I wonder if the plainclothes detective knows that siding with foreigners while arresting a citizen for their political speech is treason. The man is clearly not resisting, but the Seattle police are determined to teach him that free speech is only reserved for servants and dukes of the New World Order. They said by the time they took him away, there was a huge pool of blood on the ground. The police slammed his face with full force into the concrete. The officer then grunted with exertion and drove his face forward over the street with sadistic pleasure. The plainclothes officer then allows the protesters to pose with their bleeding trophy, while the man that originally assaulted the American citizen through the sunroof cheers and says, "Hey,
what's it like now, bitch?
Now you're bleeding. Now you're bleeding, punk. What's it like, bitch?" We later learned that the Seattle police had filled paddy wagons that day with American citizens who had tried to peacefully picket the event. When the then president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, came to Austin, Texas in 2003, the police did their job and protected free speech, unlike the traitors in Seattle. The leader of the narco-terrorist state was traveling throughout the U.S. and being welcomed at every stop by governors and mayors. Fox was in Austin ostensibly to give an award to the Austin Police Department for breaking federal law and not arresting illegal aliens. Mexican Secret Service attempted to boss the media around, but backed off when they realized that this country still had some freedom.
We can do that if both all our cameras are working. And then we're going to have to take this out.
So what is this? What is
this? He's going to go check. It'd be good if you can angle it that way.
Fox was scheduled to spew his propaganda and meddle in our affairs during a 30-minute press conference outside of the governor's mansion. Governor Perry and Fox were forced to cut their conference short after only 2 minutes because of protesters bullhorning at the gates.
provide. Good evening to you, and thank you for joining us tonight. I'm Christine Haas.
And I'm Ronald Oliveira. This is KVU News at 10. Mexican President Vicente Fox is now in Austin, arriving at the governor's mansion amid very tight security tonight. KVU's Chris Gutierrez is live at the mansion with tonight's top story. Chris?
Ron, Mr. Fox and Governor Perry addressed the media for about 10 minutes tonight. Now, they plan on talking about issues that affect both Texas and Mexico. Things like education, water resources, expanding trade, and, of course, immigration issues.
We are here because we want to strengthen our relationship, both in political terms, in economic terms. We are here to be close to our paisanos, those Mexicans that diligently, with great passion, work every day to contribute to a better being of the United States, a better being of Texas, and better being of Mexico.
Tonight is about renewing old friendships. It's about spending time with our friends. It's about our being together and enjoying a friendship.
We are very enthusiastic about this visit, which we know is going to be very productive because we have many issues on the agenda that we are going to have conversations upon. I am sure it's going to be a great day tomorrow.
Now, that voice you heard yelling in the background during President Fox's speech was that of activist Alex Jones. Jones says he wants Perry to keep Mexican immigrants out of Texas because he thinks they're taking too many American jobs.
We have record immigration, illegal immigration in the history of the world. In the history of the world. We cannot assimilate this many people. Sure. And the government is teaching them to be balkanized, whether you're from Russia or China or Mexico, to control us. It's divide and conquer, and it finally destroyed the Roman Empire, and we're following that same path now.
Even after leaving office in 2006, Vicente Fox has toured the United States, calling for amnesty and North American integration.